Hi, this is Ernie Fazio, and this is Earnestly Speaking. And we're coming to you on Long Island News Radio 103.9. And today I don't have a guest, so I'm going to be talking about some of the things that I've been thinking about, writing about, and reading about. And one of the things that I do, and I guess it's a matter of getting to be a certain age, is that you read obituaries. And obituaries have been an inspiration for me in the sense that I've met some wonderful people. And it inspired me to write some poetry about it, too. But just yesterday, or was it Saturday, in the New York Times, I came across an obituary on a guy named Gene Estes. He died. He's 78. He was a Wall Street guy. Gene Estes worked on Wall Street for about two decades and came to feel that he never had really good days. I don't come home with stories to tell or satisfaction or the feeling that I'd done anything important except for doing something for myself. Mr. Estes changed that, however, abandoning the financial world to lead to the Jericho Project, which serves the homeless, the mentally ill, and the addicted people in Harlem and South Bronx. Now, here's a privileged guy who has money and is making money, and he's thinking, this ain't it. He set up a succession of residences and started initiatives that included helping formerly homeless women to regain custody of their children. Mr. Estes died at 78 on April 9th at his home in Carroll Gardens in Brooklyn. His wife, Pat, survives him. His career, which can be traced to a night after work in 1984 when he marched into the multitudes in Grand Central Terminal to catch a train to Westchester County. He noticed a reclining woman with a black poodle among the sea of homeless people who inhabited the station in the mid-1980s. It stuck in his mind. The next evening, he introduced himself to the woman, who said her name was Patricia, and her dog was Ebony. She spoke in a soft, pleasant voice and carried notebooks filled with scrawled writings that turned out to be symptomatic of schizophrenia. Mr. Estes gave her $5, the first of many handouts. He meanwhile looked for permanent residence for her, who was homeless, addicted, and mentally ill. Finally, he founded the Jericho Project, a Manhattan-based nonprofit started in 1983. Jericho took Patricia in, and Mr. Estes accepted an invitation to join the board. He was thinking of leaving Wall Street anyway at the time and to go into public policy school to learn skills to help the homeless people. He felt he wasn't doing anything of any great value, his wife said in an interview. I mean in a moral and philosophical sense. In July of 1987, Mr. Estes quit his job, his very well-paying job. His colleagues said could not believe what he was doing. They thought he was nuts. And on October 19th, 1987, Black Monday, the market collapsed. Soon the directorship of the Jericho opened up and Mr. Estes applied. Another man also applied and was actually hired, but he rejected the offer because it paid only $17,000. It was too meager. The board turned to Mr. Estes in part because he was willing to work for no pay in his first year. And he served as a director for 18 years, retiring in 2005. Today, the Jericho Project serves 1,500 adults and children, including more than 500 military veterans, with housing and services. It says it spends $12,000 a year for each adult client, less than half the cost of a cot in a New York City shelter. Gene Martin Estes was born in June of 1935 in Moline, Illinois, and grew up in the nearby Rock Island community. This man is an example of what goes on in the heads of a lot of people, that their lives are not really satisfied. Now, one of the things we do need in this world is money, and we work very hard to get it. But every once in a while, we come to the point where we say, you know what? This ain't working for me. This is not satisfying. We have to get to that point where we need the money. We don't need the money anymore, but we need the satisfaction. If you never get past that point where you're still needing money, you'll never get to the point where you'll get to your final satisfaction out of life, in my opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of people. I wrote this poem about probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I'll read it to you. You'll see why I think it was inspiring to me. It's called Obituaries. When reading the obituaries, I find some special lights, some of whom I've chanced to know, and that was my delight. Most of them I never met. We lead our lives apart, but never mind the distance, still they moved my heart. Musicians and performers gave me their best take of a world that I myself must savor and remake. Some invented things, some merely made me laugh. Some dissected life, parting wheat from chaff. Most were ordinary types that smiled when we met, raised their children properly while having no regrets. A slow line of progress laid out over ages, with so many bricks upon the road and words of many sages. Each good passing soul makes his meager mark, satisfies his simple goals while rolling back the dark. I can't tell you how many wonderful people I have met in this world, and there's been a legion of them. And each of them gives me one thing that I actually value, and it's called humility. Knowing that you, if you are any good at what you do, and if you've made your contribution, you still have a long journey to go. And that so many people have done so many things and dedicated their lives for so hard that it makes you a little humble to say, okay, I've had a good life and I've done well, but is it enough? And truly, it usually is pretty meager. So, I give you, I part with you these words, and hopefully that it's an inspiration to all of us. If we just take a moment and think about it. But before I close, I wanted to talk about one other thing. It was about, I write these essays on special holidays. And this one I wrote for the 4th of July one year, a number of years ago. And it was about a lady named Eva Zeisel. When I saw the Statue of Liberty, tears ran down my face, recalls Eva Zeisel, because I knew I was home. Eva Zeisel is a world-famous pottery artist, commissioned by the Soviet Union to create for the state. She created for the state the official pottery and the dinnerware. And early in the 20th century, later for reasons that were never fully explained to her, the official charge was plotting to assassinate Stalin. She was jailed for 16 months by her previous benefactors. She was just as inexplicably released, and she immigrated to Germany at a time when Hitler was consolidating his power. Zeisel, a Jew, saw the danger and quickly got out of Germany. After briefly being in England, she immigrated to the United States. So there she was entering America, a country she had never set foot in before, and her mind had come, and in her mind she had come home. The notion of being comfortable in the country for even the newest emigres is not all that unique. My own mother had recollections of entering New York Harbor, and she revealed that magical moment. Almost instantly, they bond and feel allegiance to this country. I'll go on with this in the second segment. This is Ernie Fazio. This is Earnestly Speaking. And we're coming to you from Long Island News Radio. And we'll be back in a moment. And this is 103.9 on the FM dial. We'll be talking, too, about other things that I've written and done. And I hope we keep it interesting. Thanks for listening. Again, this is Ernie Fazio. This is Long Island News Radio. See you later. Hi, this is Ernie Fazio, and this is Earnestly Speaking, and we're back on 103.9 radio, Long Island News Radio. And what I was talking about was a lady who came to this country that she was a complete stranger to this country, never been here before, but immediately she felt an affinity for a country that she had never been for, because intellectually and the ideas of this country have been spread around the world. This is something that people look for. And we may ponder the affinity of this new country that is known to our ancestors. Those of us who were born here can only imagine the experience of abandoning a homeland that had let them down. People left their villages, families, friends, and all that was familiar to them. In many cases, perhaps most cases, the new country, America, was hostile to them. As we see in our own country today, the hostility to immigrants. As hostile as it may have been, they knew that they had a better chance at life here than the place that they had come from. See, it's about freedom. It was about freedom then, and it's still about freedom today. Safety, security are extremely important conditions, but the great elixir, the great mind-bending idea is that of freedom. If we trade our sacred freedoms for a promise of safety from the state, it is indeed a sorry trade. In the final analysis, the state can never guarantee our safety. But state after state has been successful in robbing their populations of this precious concept. A personal freedoms, remove freedoms and all else you make is not worth much at all. It's but a trinket. And in keeping with this idea, I have a little verse that my mother used to say. And remember, she was an Italian immigrant, and she came here as a young girl. She used to recite something like this from time to time. Be there a man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, this is my home, my native land, my country. And she wasn't even an American-born person. But that's how they feel, and the reason why they feel is pretty obvious when you live here. So, as I was saying, there's a certain magic about being in this country that is felt by people who came here as immigrants rather than people who, like you and I, who were probably born here. We have a different take on things, but with a little bit of thought, we can really appreciate what these people feel, and it's pretty profound. And then for the next segment here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be talking about something that I feel is very important and a problem that we should be dealing with. I call it citizens divided. And where do we begin? Our elected officials in Washington are no longer with the people. I say that with the naivete that implies that maybe once they were. A few years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that the allowing corporations to donate unlimited amounts of money to the candidates they wanted to support. Since that ruling, it became clear to me, as any individual contributing to the campaign of national candidates by individuals was fruitless and foolish. My $50, $100, or even $500 was small potatoes, and it didn't do anything. The Senate and the House of Representatives need to compete with money for real money, and these days, real money means not a few thousand dollars, it's millions. In other words, we simply don't matter anymore. The income disparity alone would dictate that there just isn't enough money in the coffers of individuals to support campaigns. The very wealthy control the entire game, and any contribution by the ordinary guy is a waste of money. We may as well use the money to take the kids to the ball game. As bad as the situation, it's all only part of the problem. The larger problem is the disparity of wealth between the people who make things and create services and the people who dream up financial instruments and rob the country's wealth. Few people understand these instruments, but what we do understand is that the game is stacked against us. You may hear the mantra that the disparity is a function of education differences, and that is partially true, but it's not the whole truth. The fallacy is that those with higher education are self-made, but that is almost never true. We live in a country where you have courts, and we have systems, and we have banking, and we have GPS that I don't pay for, and you don't pay for. You know, you go out, and if you own a yacht, you go out into the ocean, you get GPS, and you didn't pay for that directly, or you didn't buy it directly. It came out of your tax dollars, and that's how it got purchased. That's why we pay taxes. We don't mind paying taxes if we know we're getting services for them. But everybody who tells me that they're self-made, I just wince because I know some very, very successful people, and very few of them will tell you that stupid story, because it is a stupid story. There is a class warfare in this country, and you can bet that the union carpenter, the union electrician did not start it, nor did they win. The assault on the working class has been unrelenting for decades. Union busting has been very effective. Union workers represent the smallest percentage of the workforce than any time in the last 70 years. Labor is in disarray, not very different from what it was in the 1920s. That legacy of income disparity was instrumental in bringing on the Great Depression of the 30s. Why should we think that the outcome is going to be any different? The outcome of that legacy is the legacy of the working poor, and we have trouble in River City, so to speak. The other problem is term limits. The benefits and liabilities of term limits have to be weighed. If we limit an elected official, we run the risk of term limiting a devoted public servant and replacing him with a less able office holder, of course, or worse, even a crook. If we reject the notion of term limits, the power of incumbency will allow a slug who may be a good campaigner stay in office long before his ideas are proven terrible. With term limits, we could remove from office people who would be like Ted Kennedy and Michael Bloomberg, or even Mario Cuomo, if you like those people, and Bob Dole, and Orrin Hatch. Well, depending on your politics, you might say, who cares? But we would lose those people if you think they're competent and worth keeping. But the other thing is that when you create a system where people are constantly changing, you create a desire on the part of many more people who want to get into the game and feel that they have some contribution to make. And therefore, we lose a lot of new talent. Now, suppose somebody who's really good gets elected out of office or get forced out of office by virtue of term limits. Well, then what will happen is that they might run for a higher office, or they may serve in a different way, like presidents do. You take presidents like Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, and to some extent, and Gerald Ford, and other presidents who have left the office, they do good things for the country. They continue to build goodwill for the country. Or they'll do take on projects that, would help poor people around the world or in the country. So to take these people out of office at a time when they might be very, very productive and very good is a double-edged sword. We might actually gain something beneficial by doing it. So that argument is negated of losing competent people is negated by the fact that they might be doing something else. Equally important, by the way, and if you look at the records of, say, Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton has done a lot of good. And by the way, he's one of our favorite sons now. Of course, he was nothing but a low life crook all kinds of names, including murderer. He was called everything under the sun. But we have a strange bunch of politics in this country, and it's really very depressing at times. But it could be better, and it's only going to be better when we start making it better. And by making how we can do that is to take no guff from anybody. Speak your mind. Tell them what you want. Tell them what you need so we can have a country that serves the people better. And I'm very happy with this country. I think it could be better. And I think we all should be working toward making it better. And then as far as those loudmouths on the radio, like me, who tell you one thing, give you their opinion is their opinion. It has nothing to do with your life. Make your life and do what you need to do to make the contribution you feel you have to make. I've enjoyed talking to you today about my personal thoughts. And this is Ernie Fazio, and this is Earnestly Speaking. This is Long Island News Radio. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you soon. Thank you.